Blog Talk Radio.
From Trayvon Martin to Jordan Davis to Michael Brown to Eric Gardner to DJ Henry, America has a problem, a race and gender problem. And sitting right in the bullseye are countless black men, young and old, victimized by police tactics that work against them in grand jury rulings and courthouse verdicts. We can no longer look the other way. Americans are finally saying enough to the senseless killings that are happening around the land. Important details missing from the dispatcher's call to police resulted in a 12-year-old child being gunned down by a rookie cop in Cleveland, and a man with asthma desperately calling out, "I can't breathe," succumbed to a New York cop's chokehold that finished his life forever. Veteran diversity professional and former chair of the National Black MBA Association, Bill Wells, will discuss the direction of our country as we wrestle with police brutality and its final impact on black men everywhere. And we'll also look at the groundswell of peaceful protest around the country and the world that is waking up to the changes needed to be made to fix the injustices so badly derailing our nation. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Thank you so much for listening to the show. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. I have what everybody else has, have a little bit of a bug, but we are sort of working through it, and hopefully the voice will improve, certainly when I do my Christmas show next week. I hope you're doing well, and hopefully the weather is cooperating wherever you happen to live. There's a lot of news going on now, and we just don't have enough time to really talk and dissect so much of it. From a crazy lunatic in Sydney, Australia. I've been to Sydney. I know the area from the years back when I traveled there and worked there in Sydney. And you think about those two families now who are tragically mourning the loss of their son and daughter, the barrister or lawyer, mother of three, who died at the hands of that crazy person in Sydney, along with the store operator, in his early 30s. So two very young people, vibrant and in the prime of their life, who were gone because of someone's demented concept of religion. And then we go to see what happened in Pakistan with the 130-plus young people, children, literally children, who were gunned down, sort of cowering away from all the harm that was being wreaked upon them in that school in northern Pakistan. Their teachers were killed and burned alive. Just horrific things that are taking place here in the United States. Another crazy person who goes and shoots his ex-wife and then kills her family members in Pennsylvania. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. You can just pick your day, and there is something newsworthy to really talk about. But we're going to really focus today on how the judicial system, how the relationships with police departments around the United States tie in directly with diversity, multiculturalism, and most importantly, race. And I'm going to bring my special guest, Bill Wells, on in just a few seconds. But I want to read a wonderful litany. I'm not going to read it all, but I'll read a little bit of it that we read in my church on Sunday. This was actually based on a litany by Bishop Adam J. Richardson, who was a bishop in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and I am also AME, part of that denomination. So we adopted it based on what he had written. And it starts off with, "Today we affirm the value, worth, and dignity of all human beings and logically declare that all lives matter and black lives matter." And I should say that we were asked as a connectional AME church to wear black on Sunday. So all of us had black on, And if you go to my blog, you'll actually see a picture of James Williams, who has on a black I Can't Breathe black T-shirt. I picture him in the blog today, and that's at tellcarol.com, tellcarol with an E.com. Go to the blog section, and you'll see the collage of pictures, including James Williams with this black T-shirt on that says, I Can't Breathe. Today we stand in sympathy and solidarity with grieving families in every region of the country where unarmed men and boys die at the hands of police. This is one thing we can demonstrate, that all black lives and black lives matter. Today we stand in the tradition of the prophets as grand juries keep disappointing fathers and mothers, anticipating justice of their sons and fathers, as it seems that young men and older men are getting the death penalty for minor offenses. They were unarmed. Can we remain silent when we really need to say that all lives matter and black lives matter? Today we stand as a solemn act of protest. The chokehold was caught on camera. We saw it. You can understand why we are fed up. We are joining our voices around the country and around the world to say that enough is enough. Pardon us if we scream, all lives matter and black lives matter. Today, we promise to go beyond protest as we covenant to work for civilian review boards, outside investigations of police shootings, grand jury reform, body cameras, better police screening and training, and better police communication relations, because 10 years from today, we don't want to have to say again, all lives matter and black lives matter. In this Advent season, it is the gospel writer Matthew who remembered the words of the prophet Jeremiah saying, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Today, Rachel is joined by mothers of Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, John Crawford III, Von Derrett Myers, Eric Garner, Ezell Ford, Aki Gurley, Dontre Hamilton, Rakia Boyd, Dante Parker, Romaine Brisbane, Timothy Stansberry, Sean Bell, Oscar Grant, Arnold Campbell, Alonzo Ashley, Wendell Allen, Jonathan Farrell, and DJ Henry. Is it any wonder that a young man carries a protest sign asking the question, am I next? Let's bring in our guest, Bill Wells Jr. He is the former chair of the National Black MBA Association, also one of our kitchen cabinet members. And I want to, first of all, express our deep and sincere sympathy, Bill, for the loss of your mom. I really thank you very much for being on the show today. I know that the funeral was on Monday and was on the weekend, and you were back in Iowa taking care of family responsibilities. So deep, deep sympathies for the loss of a wonderful 91-year-old beautiful woman, Mrs. Wells. We certainly send our sympathies out to you.
Well, thank you so much, Carol. Very much appreciated. And it's just been an outpouring of support and emotion from so many friends. But Mom's legacy, she was a very outgoing person. So we're trying to carry on the tradition of her presence. And even though she's not here, she's still with us. So
I thank you again. Absolutely. We dedicate this show to her and her memory today. I wanted to ask you, you have two young men. You have two adult sons and grandchildren now. What was the message when they were growing up different parts of the country, New Jersey, and certainly for an extended period of time in Minnesota, what message did you pass to your sons to keep them away from harm's way? And I say this because a lot of people don't realize that in the black community, heavy policing and overextended policing is so great that there is this conversation that black families have with their sons so that not if they're going to get stopped by the police, but when they get stopped by the police, they will know how to behave. Bill, how did you and Karen, your wife, handle that?
Well, that's a very good, interesting question. Now, you know, I'll be clear. My kids were fortunate, I guess you would say fortunate, but they did have the opportunity to grow up in suburban environments, but that doesn't lessen the impact of who they are and what they are. And that's a conversation that I've had with them from the time that they were little boys. And not to put them on edge, but to just help them understand that, you know, there are evil forces out there and they will take them out. It's also a conversation that I shared with my colleagues, and many of my other good friends had sons as well, and we shared a common conversation with all of those young guys. You know, it's easy for young kids today in particular to grow up assuming that racism has been addressed, all those barriers have been knocked down. And when something like, whether it's Michael Brown, Trayvon, or the situation in New York, comes around, sometimes they, I hate to say this, but sometimes they don't connect that to a circumstance that's attributable largely to race. But, you know, as you read through the list, you know, it typically is a young black male or an adult black male. It typically is black. It typically is a male. So it's a conversation, but it has to be a healthy dialogue and conversation, one that, you know, engages your children in understanding the dynamics, because it's complicated, and you certainly don't want to scare the kids off, because at the end of the day, you want to help them be productive citizens in our society, and they can't walk around with a chip on their shoulder.
Right. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were. Here we have the young man, Tamir Rice, 12 years old. He's probably a big kid, or a lot of kids at that age that are, you know, are large or tall, and they are mistaken for older teenagers. The call goes in by someone who saw him brandishing a gun, but that caller specifically said three times, "This looks like a fake gun. It looks like a fake gun," when he was talking to the dispatcher. The dispatcher, and this is again where training is just so needed, the dispatcher failed to tell the officer that she talked to that the gun may possibly be a fake gun. First of all, they thought the kid was 20 years old, and so the information goes forward to the police officer. The police officer gets there, and instead of using better judgment, just automatically assumes that this is a thug or this is someone who's out to harm someone, and shoots him dead within minutes, literally minutes of arriving at the scene. So here we have so many on different layers. We have dynamics that are going on in terms of information that is incomplete, that then leads to the death of a 12-year-old, and these kind of circumstances based on assumptions that just aren't true. Bill, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, that for me, that case, and then on the heels of that, the case was not related to what had happened with the Department of Justice when Eric Holder and his office declared that they are investigating Cleveland, and Cleveland has so many irregularities that there's going to be some kind of overhaul done with the Cleveland Police Department. Bill, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, Carol, this is a biggie. it's real big. Let's face it, racism as it is a construct and a key part of our society is systemic. It has been institutionalized, and it didn't just start yesterday. It started hundreds of years ago. And I believe what we see today is nothing more than a modern-day version of what people experienced previously, that being the value of a person's life, in particular a black person's life, was not highly valued. It was not considered. And I mean, we can trace back, and, you know, you're right, we don't have time to get into socialism, more of a psychological and sociological understanding of all the dynamics. And I would suggest to folks, do what you can, not just to look at all the incidences that have occurred, tragic incidences that have occurred recently, but try to get a historical base of understanding and learning. That will help, I think it will help people understand better. The problems that we face today, it isn't just Trayvon, it's not just Michael Brown, not just Eric Garner, it is a institutional pattern of behavior that it seeps in all areas of our country. So, you know, so when you talk about how do we address this, first of all, we've got to help define the problem. And I the unfortunate thing is I believe we tend to talk in sound bites. And, you know, the media helps to feed a frenzy, if you will, that really takes our focus off of what really is behind all of this. So when we talk, even Carol, you and I talked the other day about is training needed, training for the police force. Well, yes, it is. But if we just train the police force, it still doesn't get to that systemic inherent and that innate perception that people have about others, whether it's racism, sexism, homophobiaism. Those things will take you out. The other thing I would mention is when people, because sometimes people will say, well, you know, black folks are just too sensitive. They're just kind of up in arms. Well, show me where we have a daily reporting in the news of young white men or young white women being taken out summarily, as we've seen with black
true
men. So
I want to support what you just said. I'm not going to mention this person's name. It's a well-respected business person who I know. He is white. He lives in the South. He had a troubled son, and I'm saying this because he put the information on Facebook, and that's why I'm sharing this. But this is a white gentleman in a suburban community, well-respected family, troubled son who had just gotten out of rehab, went to the ex-girlfriend's house, caused a commotion, girlfriend calls the police. He's then sitting in his car with a shotgun on the seat of the car. The police go and they talk to him and tried to talk him out of the car for 1 hour, Bill. 1 hour. Now, this man had a gun, a loaded gun in the car. After that hour had passed, he then reaches for another gun. He had a handgun and then pointed that at the police, and then they shot and killed him. But my point is, clearly this is an unfortunate situation, but I kept saying, had this been a black person, same circumstances, I think he would have been dead within 30 seconds.
Just because you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, just because of the circumstances and the way the police would have read the situation. Here they were desperately trying to get this guy out of the car. Would they have done the same thing with an African-American? I don't think so.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, Carol, and as we have discussed, I think this is probably a topic for ongoing discussion, and whether you do it on a regular basis or, you know, sporadic. But I think the conversation needs to continue. But at the end of the day, we all need to kind of come together with what I'll say is a call to action. You know, kind of what are the positive insights that we can get from these tragedies that can help us come together with common thought. I mean, this is an American issue. It is not just, and it's a worldwide issue, but for the purposes of this conversation, this is what we know is happening in America. Now, the question then becomes is, okay, so what are we going to do about it? I mean, quite frankly, I don't care to see another issue in the media that, you know, it talks about the deplorable behavior. I don't like the mischaracterization that we got even around Trayvon or Michael Brown or this young kid in Cleveland. I mean, they all get castigated in a kind of a perverse imagery that would suggest that they got what they deserve. And that's, no one deserves to lose their life.
Exactly.
No one needs, you know. So we've got to think about how do we get our hands around this in a positive manner. Now, it's not going to be an easy conversation, but one of the things I would suggest to you is that, and I mentioned this to you, I had the opportunity. I was in New York on Wednesday, December 3rd,
Right.
And
yeah,
I was
please
there
tell
for...
us about this. I want to set this up for you. Again, this is such an amazing story that Bill's getting ready to tell, and it is directly related to people taking action based on these injustices. So, Bill, continue.
Right. So this is not an anecdotal thing that I'm relating to you. It's one that I had a direct experience with. And essentially what happened was I was in New York for personal reasons, and you know, we'd been watching the protests that had started to emerge. Now, the New York's the grand jury ruling for the situation that occurred in New York with Eric Gardner,
right.
The incredible outcome, even though it was videotaped. So I'm in there, and I'm actually coming to an intersection up in Columbus Circle there in New York, up not too far from Central Park, right next to Central Park, actually. And all of a sudden, out of the peripheral vision, I noticed a large number of people. And as I then turned to look over, it wasn't just a large number. It was hundreds and hundreds of people very quietly walking up the street.
Right.
And literally, when I looked closer, because quite frankly, it was almost like if I didn't hurry up and cross the street, I would not have been able to cross the street to get to where I was going.
Sure.
What I saw was a large number of individuals. They were chanting. They were chanting, hands up, don't shoot, I can't breathe. You know, different chants. But it was all
right.
Coordinated, syncopated, quietly, very effectively done. And then at a certain moment, they all literally just laid in the street. Now, this is New York City, and it's in
that's
the
amazing. Right.
It's very, very busy. Buses came to a halt. All cars came to a halt. People on the sidewalks came to a halt, including myself. The police who were nearby, there were no sirens, no whistles, no shouting, no anger. It was a peaceful protest. The key thing that I found was it was male, female, white, black, young, middle-aged, older. It was one of the most homogenized groups that I have ever seen. It was a broad spectrum. It looked like America. And what these people were protesting was not just racist behavior. I believe they were protesting egregious behavior by the police and these incredibly insane outcomes from grand juries. And it speaks more to the pattern of things than any one incident. You know, sometimes we'll say, well, in this particular case it was that, in that particular case it was this. It doesn't matter. There's a pattern and a systemic outcome. But again, that large crowd, and then after a period of time, they got up and they moved further down and they went to another location. But by now, traffic was completely snarled in New York, completely.
And nobody honked the horn. Yeah, the way you said that there were no horns honked, the sirens did not blast. The police obviously anticipated this was going to happen. This is the American way. Our American system is based on protest and people saying enough is enough. So for anyone that says, oh, this doesn't make any difference, yes, it does make a difference. And I commend one person protesting or hundreds of thousands of people protesting, because that's how we ultimately will have some kind of systemic change. What do you think is going to be the outcome of all these actions? We've had protests, peaceful protests, mind you, all over the United States because of these horrific verdicts that have taken place and announcements. What are your thoughts about where we go in the future? Bill Wells.
Well, and that's a very, very good point. I believe the timing is going to be somewhat awkward. And the reason I say that is we have the holidays coming up. And I believe the intensity of the outcry is going to be, to a large extent, it's going to be kind of diminished because people are going to be celebrating other things. I hope that we don't forget Eric Gardner, Michael Brown, Trayvon, and this young kid in Cleveland. I hope we don't. Now, on the backside is we are coming into January, and there will be Martin Luther King Day in the middle of January. I'm hoping then the conversation picks back up. But as we did think about it, Carol, it wasn't that long ago where we celebrated the 50-year anniversary of the civil rights legislation. But today, barely a year or so later, no conversation.
Yeah.
No conversation. So where I'm hoping we go with this is we get to, as I said, a different kind of conversation. I don't mean the kind of debate on TV. Let's talk about what it is and what we need to do. And then let's figure out how to break that down so it's not just at a really high level, but goes all through our communities. I sent you a note earlier this morning. I just happened to notice that there were a couple of interviews that President Obama had done, and
yes.
Apparently he was in People magazine and did an interview with BET, Black Entertainment Television, and he spoke to instances where he had been very much categorized as either a waiter in a restaurant or even at a gala, formal affair, where people either ask him to get a drink or handed them the keys so he could go get their car. And he was reminded of the fact that he, too, even though he's president now or was a senator back in those days, oftentimes color would just...
That has had such an impact on so many people. You've mentioned that. I know that the president of Ariel Capital, excuse me, whose name just Melody Hobson, she's told a very significant story about being presumed to be the waiter in an event where she was. Eric Holder has also said the same thing. It's a nationwide problem, and this is why I have real concerns about the future direction of diversity without the discussion of race, because I just don't think you can have that kind of conversation in terms of diversity and multiculturalism and this new word inclusion without having the underpinnings dealing with race. And what you're saying is that we really need to have more of a it's a layered conversation. It's not just one conversation. It's many conversations. I facilitated a workshop yesterday for a human resource organization I belong to here in Boston, and one of our guest speakers, Maurice Wright, brilliantly said it is having a sense of urgency, and knowing that sense of urgency is so critically linked with the success of these conversations so that we can consciously have people to make decisions because they're aware. And so often people, it's not a matter of maliciousness with police officers. We're not castigating and downing all police officers. It's when you have had minimal training and you have a gun that's been given to you, then things can happen that can be detrimental and mortal for the livelihood of the person who you're trying to protect. So it's just a matter of looking at these activities from the perspective where people are constantly, their energy, their information, their intellect is refreshed because those resources are provided for them. In closing, share with us your thoughts about going forward in terms of these conversations that need to take place. I hope these peaceful protests will continue as well. Bill Wells, share with us other thoughts about the subject.
Okay. Well, I hopefully, Carol, that, you know, as I said earlier today, I believe we really need a call to action. And it's not time just to have more conversation, although I think that is critically important. I believe the conversation, though, if it doesn't lead to action, and when I say action, I don't mean violence and that. What I mean is strategies. What are the types of things that we need to do to – it's almost simple. I mean, am I my brother's keeper? You know, how do we become the shepherd and for the kind of behavior, and how do we then call out that bad behavior in a way that gets addressed effectively? So knowing that racism and all the situations that we've experienced here recently are all a part of our history, we can't undo the history. So I believe we've got to take a pulse check in America. Where are we today? And that's kind of an assessment. And that assessment then leads to the kind of conversation that needs to take place with people being held accountable for what goes on in their area of responsibility. So, I mean, that's kind of big, and I'm sorry that I don't have the magic answer. But
That's all right. You summed it up very well, and I'll sort of tag team in with that sense of urgency that is so needed, and just other thoughts, too, in terms of seeking ambiguity was also the conversation from yesterday. Bill Wells,
yep.
We're going to come back and talk about this later. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Thank you.
Happy Hanukkah to everyone, and we'll be back on the air next week, and this subject will definitely go forward with our conversation. Thank you so much. Take care. We'll see everybody next week. Thank you, Bill Wells. Appreciate your comments and your thoughts, too, always.